Well, good evening and welcome back to the Journey Home program. I'm your host, Jean-Marc Grodi, and once again, we have this great opportunity here on EWTN to hear a story of the good things the Lord has done in our lives. We're joined by Greg and Jennifer Willits. Greg is a cradle Catholic, and Jennifer is a former non-denominational Christian, and their stories collide and intertwine. It's great to have you guys with us tonight to share your stories.
Thank you for having us.
Good to be here.
It's good to have you. We were going to have you a few years ago in COVID. Interrupted that. It's great to finally get you on.
Yeah, God's timing.
Yeah. And we're going to talk later about your ministry, rosaryarmy.com, but people can check out that website in the meantime. I think we'll go to you, Jennifer, tell you a bit of your background, the beginning of your story.
Okay. Well, I grew up in New York City, very small family, just my brother and myself and my parents. And at the very beginning of my journey, actually began in the Catholic Church. Okay. I have a vague memory of being, I remember through pictures, actually, that my mom flew me back to her hometown in Puerto Rico and actually chose to have me baptized there, even though I grew up in New York City. And I can understand that, a parent's decision to, for something as important as baptism, mm-hmm. to kind of go back to a familiar. And so I was actually baptized on the island of Puerto Rico. Wow. And but then most of my life really was steeped in New York City life, American culture. Never really spoke Spanish, even though I probably should have. But our home was a little bit bilingual in the beginning of its formation. But basically, I just became very Americanized very quickly, went into the public school system. But I went through all the motions of just following my parents to church. Mm-hmm. And I remember being, you know, in Catholic Mass, but not understanding what it was. And I remember getting a First Communion dress. I was going through the motions of, all right, something big is about to happen. And then it all just stopped. And as a child, you're not really privy to complex conversations that of maybe something happening with on the adult level, but clearly something happened. And as an adult now, I'll admit to being kind of curious, like, well, what was it? Now that I'm a parent myself, I can't help but be curious. Something occurred, and all I know is that it was a division of sorts between my father and a priest, that the outcome of the conversation meant an exodus from Catholicism at that point. So I did not ever complete that sacrament. I only received the sacrament of baptism. But as an eight-year-old girl, I just didn't really know what was happening. I'm just following my parents and trying to understand what is happening. And so my next memories were actually in a non-denominational church, although I wouldn't have known that term back then. It was just where my parents were telling me to go. And it was a building that looked nothing like a church, very nondescript, almost like a warehouse. But there was clearly a reason for all of us congregating in this space, that there was no exterior expressions of God, no religious anything. It was just, we're all here, we're going to talk about the Lord. We all have our black leather-bound Bibles, and we're going to discuss the Word. And I was like, okay, well, I'm in it now. I have to be here. I remember not liking it at all. I remember feeling like this was sort of drudgery to me. It felt lifeless. It felt like nothing fun. I just wanted fun. I wanted to be a kid. I wanted to have a great time. This was adult boring stuff, and I felt very trapped. And I just kind of followed my parents in this journey, and having my formative years, like we're talking between the ages of like 8 and 16. So that, you know, if you're a dad and you have kids that you've witnessed go through that developmental stages, they really start to wake up to a lot of the realities. Now I can identify it as the age of reason. At the time, I would not have even known that term. But I started to look around trying to understand this world that was bigger. And I didn't understand it, but I know this is in my family's life. I felt the difference. I felt that I was in a marginal society of some kind. And as I got older, as I was approaching like middle school ages, I came to learn the name of this church because I was asking questions. I'm starting to be curious about, where am I? What church do I go to? And all they would tell me was, well, we belong to the Worldwide Church of God. I'm like, okay, but what is it? I'm already aware of terms like Baptist, Methodist, nice, neat, tidy adjectives that mm-hmm. described a denomination.
Right.
And so what are we? we belong to the Worldwide Church of God. Was the, I'm like, yeah, but it, why don't we have a name like other names? You know, like, no, we're non-denominational. We don't subscribe to a particular branch of anything. And I'm like, oh, well, that I had to accept it. I didn't have a choice. It just felt really weird. Like, how will I ever explain this to kids at school? Because they're asking these questions and I don't have an answer. So we started.
And to make it even worse, you had like that particular non-denominational church. You didn't do Christmas and you didn't do Easter. You're going to church on Saturdays instead of Sundays for some reason. I mean, there were like all these rules.
Some visible differences that people.
Right. And
I had to try to explain that to a public school kid who, even though they may not have been a part of any religious family of any kind, they were aware, well, Christmas is something the society does. Mm-hmm. Halloween is something the society does. And, you know, Jennifer Alvarez back then was this very strange girl who was not participating in any of these things. And, you know, you just stand out. Those differences make you stand out. Right. And we had left our New York area and traveled down south to Georgia. My dad took a job out in Georgia. So we settled in and around Metro Atlanta. And they continued attending services of the Worldwide Church of God, even in the Atlanta, Georgia area, because it was, well, worldwide. There was, back then, probably 60,000 members. You know, I've since learned that. I didn't know it at the time, but it felt like we were a part of something because there was other people in the gymnasium that was rented out for worship services, or the sermons is what we were. That was more of the language at the time. There was, I don't even know if I've heard the word worship in that context before, but it made for a very tumultuous teenage experience because my idea of God was being really shaped by this non-denominational church. And since I had no reference point, I had long since forgotten whatever little I saw of Catholicism was just a faded memory at this point. Right. Everything now was this church and how different and unusual it was and how we couldn't eat pork. And, you know, there was this real emphasis on worshiping or following the rules of the Sabbath. So I had to know when sundown was on a Friday and when sundown was on a Saturday. So when I can kind of go back to normal. But when we entered into the Sabbath, life changed. It wasn't super strict. We just stayed home. We didn't really do anything fun or no outings of any kind. I just knew that I kind of had to be home.
Bible board games, and you loved that.
That was really tough. That was a painful experience for me. Thank you for dredging up that memory. Bible Trivial Pursuit, you know, at the Alvarez house. And I'm like, I don't care who begot who. I just want my pie piece, and I want to move on. Like, I don't know. I don't know. But I remember being super resistant. I was just bucking the system, even within that non-denominational church. I had a weird revulsion toward the Bible. I saw it as a negative thing. I remember being forced to be in religious youth groups for that church. And it was called like YOU and YES. Those were the buzz terms. Youth Educational Something Society.
That works.
And, YOU, Youth Opportunity United. I don't know. They had a thing. And I was a part of it because I didn't have a choice. But, you know, you make friendships. I was a social person, so I made friendships wherever I was. But I really resisted the idea of, like, wanting to open up that Bible and know the Word of God. I just didn't want to do it. I don't know why I had a revulsion. I just saw it as this antiquated, old, like, it doesn't matter. We live in this more modern world now, and we can still find God in this modern sense. And I'm like, oh, I just eye roll at myself now. But back then, I was very passionate about my position.
Yeah.
But I went through the motions, and I was very obedient. And I tried to just make the best of the situation. But as I got older in my teen years, I never really stopped being very inwardly focused. I mean, I guess now I would call it a type of narcissism, I suppose. I'm just full of myself. I was just that kind of girl. I just wanted to do what felt good, and my parents didn't always like it. And very quickly, I felt like I was branching away from my family of four. So much so that my brother, who was, you know, at the time very closely aligned with my parents' values, and he did not buck the system, a much more phlegmatic personality, did not rock the boat. And he, you know, at the time, he's apologized, okay, since then. He's not proud of this moment, but he looked at me and says, you are a black sheep in this family. And I'm like, wow, you know what? I am. You know, like, maybe I am. Maybe I don't want to be a part of this family, you know? And so that kind of, I interiorized that. I was the one who was going to sneak out of the house and take my dad's car and drive to places that I shouldn't. I mean, I was not a good girl. I was just not. I was into music that I probably shouldn't have been listening to. I was searching for something, but I didn't know what I was searching for, but I didn't want whatever my parents had.
Yeah.
That was very clear to me. And eventually I crossed the line and I, you know, and in my Catholic vernacular, I would say I sinned, okay? So I was leading a very sinful secret life inside my parents' house, and they didn't even know it, but I always felt guilty. I had the sense of guilt. I had the sense of, I need to tell you what I did. And I don't know where this came from. Like, why was I wanting to confess these terrible things that I was doing? And I just wanted them to know the truth. So that meant something to me, but I didn't know why or what I was doing, but I did. And the minister at the church I attended found out of my indiscretions, and I had then been subject to a process I can only refer to as a type of excommunication. There was not a lot of forgiveness ever preached in this expression of the church, or at least the one I attended. So if I did something that was considered indecent or wrong in any way, I was kicked out. And my parents had to honor that. And so I can't even imagine how that could have felt from a parent's point of view when you think you are a part of a God family that is true and real, and then your child did something that now you have to part ways. I mean, there's a little bit, that kind of sounds a little bit like Scientology or cultish, where where family members had to be torn apart because they could not live in alignment on a certain set of values.
Well, you'd mentioned earlier, too, that, again, that some of these features of that non-denominational church that you were part of, you're not doing Christmas and Easter and some of these things with the Sabbath. And yet, again, the answer that you received was that, well, we're non-denominational. Well, that doesn't answer the question of why do we do X, Y, or Z versus something else.
Right. Yeah. And when you're young, a teenager, you're just not going to, you're not even going to know to ask those questions. Right. And I certainly didn't know. I just felt like this was not a place where I wanted to be anymore. And I didn't feel wanted anymore. And I didn't. And so I thought this was how God feels about me. It began what turned out to be a very large lie that I just believed it. I took it in. It's like, all right, you don't want me. That is the message. You don't want me.
Yeah.
Then I don't want to be here either.
Let's pause there for a moment and let's find out what Greg was doing all this time. Yeah. Greg, take us back to the beginning on your side.
Yeah.
You know, what was your background and where were you at?
I'm the youngest of six. I'm originally from Atlanta.
Okay.
So she moved to Atlanta right around the time I was going to leave Atlanta. Moved around a lot as a kid. So I always kind of have the litany of everywhere I lived. And I started in Atlanta. I went to Columbus, Ohio, then South Carolina, then Florida, then Cincinnati, brief time in California, back to Cincinnati, back to Georgia. I've lived in Colorado and Indiana and back
been
to
everywhere,
Georgia again.
Man.
Yeah, a little bit. It's a Johnny Cash sang about me when he had that in mind. And, you know, and moving around all those places, I went to a bunch of different Catholic parishes. So we were, I was the youngest of six kids. My parents are cradle Catholics, and we went to Catholic school, or Catholic church, wherever we went. It was in the 70s and the early part of the 80s, and just, I always say the catechesis was terrible. I mean, everywhere I went, I was always kind of surprised how bad it was. I didn't realize at the time, but when I look back at it, it's like, where was it? And the fact that, you know, I was in my late 20s before I was ever introduced to Eucharistic adoration for the first time. And how did I go all those states and all those parishes and all those places? And for some reason, in my upbringing, I never was really introduced to Jesus Christ sacramentally present in the Eucharist.
Right.
And I have to be really careful not to get bitter and angry. It's like, well, where was all that? Instead, the focus is on felt banners and, you know, holding hands and that kind of thing versus what is this faith that we believe? And so even though I'm a cradle Catholic, I really say my story didn't start to become Catholic until after Jennifer came into the church later on. And I know we'll get to that. But in high school, I a little bit of the same thing. I'd moved around so many places that I started to become disillusioned. And I remember, you know, I always had this appreciation for God, and I always was trying to follow the rules as well. I had a vague understanding of, you know, some of the church's sexual teachings, but there was also a wishy-washiness to it when I was trying to find a resource. Just, you know, basically asking the question, it's like, okay, I'm going on a date. Just how far can I go? How far can I go? And what does the church say? And the only books that were available to me were like some catechesis that came out in the early 70s with, you know, oddly drawn pictures and that kind of thing. So I was like, I was always confused. Mm-hmm. I always felt perpetually guilty, even though, like, you know, to Jennifer's point, I didn't really know why, where that was coming from. And I didn't know what I believed, because we were going through the motions of going to church every week. But all those parishes, I remember one parish on Palm Sunday, they passed out streamers. And at one point in the Mass, we all threw streamers for some reason. I don't know why. Went to another church on another, that might have been Palm Sunday as well. And literally during Mass, this was on a college campus, this giant beach ball was being thrown around during Mass. This was my experience of Catholicism in the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. And I know that wasn't a universal thing, but just for whatever reason, the churches I ended up in were always had these weird inventions and wishy-washiness. And I'm the kind of person, I like to have explanations. I like to understand why we're doing certain things. But the rules meant something to me. I always joke, when I was in college, I was living in Cincinnati. And at that time, I think it was 1991, the Bearcats basketball game went to the Final Four. So one of the games was going to be on a Saturday night. So I'm a good Catholic. So I went to Mass on Saturday night because I knew I was going to be way too hungover to get up the next morning to go to church. So I'm going. It's like I knew I had to check the box of going to Mass, but I was going to go off and, you know, be completely drunk and you know, rowdy that night after Mass. That was sort of, I had this crisscrossed. I didn't know what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And that really, I feel like that going to Mass that Saturday night, that summarizes how I was. I was not living the faith because I didn't understand what the faith was. There were so many contradictions, and I, you know, I progressively was moving myself away from God while at the same time trying to cling to God. I remember when I was 17, and it was the first time, like, anxiety and depression really became something I started to struggle with. It started when I was around 12, but 17 very much so. And I remember laying in bed one night, and I had been praying, and I had my first Bible. I got my first, you know, my own Bible for my 17th birthday. My mom gave me this book of devotions for teenage boys. And again, they were just wishy-washy devotions. And reading through the Bible and trying to read these devotions, I'm trying to grow closer to God, but I felt like my life just kept getting progressively more difficult the more I cling to God. And my 17-year-old brain started drawing these connections of like, well, the closer I get to God, the harder life becomes. And so I remember laying in bed one night and I said, God, I still love you. Okay, I love you. But I'm going to kind of take a little bit of a break and just sort of do things my way a little bit. And of course, everything got much, much worse very quickly soon after. I never walked away completely, though. But there was this desire of just like to understand God, but not get too close. And I would say that was pretty consistent for a long time. And then when Jennifer and I met in college, after I had moved back to Georgia for the first time I moved back, started taking some classes down at Georgia State University in downtown Atlanta. And that's where we met. The quick and dirty story is I was looking for something to do. I saw a sign above the ATM when I was taking out money one day for open auditions for the winter production of Georgia State University's theater. And I was bored. I had just broken up with a girl. I was looking for something to keep me occupied. And I went to auditions. And I was not an actor. And I ended up beating out all the theater majors for the lead role. And she was the female lead. And so that's how we met. And while...
What was the show?
Oh, it was terrible. It's terrible.
Okay.
It was Prelude to a Kiss. So
okay,
if you've ever seen the movie version of it, I was the Alec Baldwin part and she was the Meg Ryan part. So it's like, it's terrible. Please, please, please don't go watch it. Don't watch this, okay?
Immoral.
So it was just, again, we didn't know what we didn't know.
Young and stupid.
We were young and stupid. But so we met in December and while we were doing the auditions for it, met in December, started dating in February. I proposed to her in March, and we were married in September.
Wow.
And in the middle of this, you had two, you know, people in their mid-20s that were just clueless about everything. And we're talking, we're having conversations. I remember it was right after we started dating, and we might have been engaged. And we, you know, I knew that we needed to talk about faith. I wanted to get married in the Catholic Church. Again, I couldn't tell you why, but it was really important. She didn't have a church home. And at one point, the conversation came to Jennifer telling me that she was unforgivable, that God cannot and will not ever forgive her. And this was, I at least had an understanding of Catholicism that I knew that's not right, that you can confess your sins and that God will always forgive you. That at least had gotten through at some point. I don't know at which parish that lesson sunk in for me. And I remembered that moment, and we were at her parents' house, and just so clearly, like almost needing to get in her face and saying, that is not true. God loves you. And even though I was not the best witness for the faith, that was a start for us. And I believe that was probably the moment. Yeah. And around the time, even before we started dating, but we were doing the play, like one morning we met at Waffle House to have a cup of coffee before going down to the theater. And I had gone to church that morning. And she, not only was she kind of amazed that a guy her age, and again, we weren't dating yet, a guy that her age went to church, but he went to a Catholic church of all things. Mm-hmm. It was a weird thing. So that began that conversation for us that went on for the next 10 years until we really engaged in the faith.
You noted, that sort of what people would consider like a stereotype of Catholicism earlier, that, that you knew that you were going to have a drunken night out, and so you went to Mass first so that you were in the clear. And obviously, it's a stereotype, and people can poo-poo that. And we would obviously, that's wrong. There's a sin of presumption. But even there, there's something. There's a seed of, again, this recognition that God always will forgive. And God will. Now, you may stop coming back for forgiveness. Sin is dangerous in that way. But God will forgive you. And so even when we are taking advantage of God, there's still a seed there that knows, okay, God's mercy is there, and it's important. And this isn't quite right, but there's something there.
Yeah.
And so the seeds are planted. Well, what happened next?
Well, pick it up from there. I'm so glad you brought that memory back to the forefront, because it was the biggest lie that I didn't know that I believed. Yeah. When the church rejected me, excommunicated me, whatever language you want to use, the message was received. I was old enough to know I am not wanted. I am unforgivable. I am cut off. It was that real feeling of being cut off. And I just had this image of a vine and branches. When you snip that or saw that branch off, it just falls dead, withered on the ground. And I knew that was me now. And my family was still on that vine. They were still attached. And now I was off. And it was a matter of time before I would just move out of the house. Just a couple of years I could last under that weird tension. And we tried to, act like everything's fine. And, I still love my parents. I still love my brother. But it was very clear that I was very different and alone, and I just needed to start living my life, and that's exactly what I did. So that's the context of which, when I met him, I was believing, I am alone now. I am just going to be my version of a good person, and I think I largely, kind of followed a set of rules that I didn't really know I was following. But even atheists can be very, very good, nice, friendly people, And I had a sense of morals based on my definitions of that. But I just felt like I can kind of do what I want, be free. My parents clearly were still, loving me, to the best of their ability. But I didn't ask them how they felt. So I didn't know if they were hurt. That did not even cross my mind. Mm-hmm. All I knew was how I felt and what I wanted to do. And I was a go-getter type personality. I was going to get a job. I was going to make some money. I was going to have possessions and get a car and do all these things, be independent. But one thing I did remember about my journey with that non-denominational church, I clearly remembered what they said about Catholicism in particular. I was taught at a very early age, it was the most pagan religion, do not have anything to do with Catholicism. And just the idea of paganism was just like this ultimate affront to God. Do not do that. And I'm like, okay, got it.
Fortunately,
don't have anything to do with Catholics.
There was an asterisk that said, unless you meet a really cute guy.
In the bylaws.
So fast forward to his, part of the story. And he told me, some of his faith background, and he mentioned he was Catholic. I was like, oh, I'm going to try not to hold that against you.
She flat out asked me, aren't Catholics pagans?
Right.
I mean, I was like, I'm like, are we?
Are we? I don't know.
I'm not actually sure.
But it led to some very interesting conversations. But it was the beginning of a softening of the hardness that I had built over the years. I knew mercy is possible, and I felt intrigued, like, tell me more. So it was the beginning of a turning. And that was not lost on me. I felt like something is about to change. And I just didn't think it would happen this way through this particular person, through this journey at the school and theater. And what does all this have to do with God? And it was a very confusing but wonderful time.
So you offer this mercy, you give this exhortation of mercy, and you receive that. What happens next in your guys' relationship and story
together? We got married in the church.
Okay.
And then progressed to... And,
that was interesting.
And then we...
I had to say yes to it. I had to agree. I'm like...
It's super funny.
Okay.
On our wedding day video, and she hates that I point this out, but I love it. And we put this online. I mean, it's on YouTube. You can find it. That at one point, the priest is in the name of the Father, Son, Holy Spirit. And you see me do this in front of the altar. And Jennifer had no clue this was going to be part of the test. And so she's in her wedding dress. She looks beautiful. And she just sort of does this weird thing around
circle
her.
She's
like, circle thing around her face.
What?
And then she's just like, okay.
You could have told me that there was like a motion I should have rehearsed. You know,
it takes coordination. Yeah. I mean, you got to practice
okay,
it. You know?
So what does that tell you about marriage prep? Okay. I'm coming in.
Okay. Marriage prep in 1995. Let's just throw that out there.
You know, I knew I wanted to get married. What do I have to do to follow this program? It's like, okay. And I wasn't going to fight it. I was not resistant. I was like, okay, that's fine. I could sit through the classes. I'll ask the questions. I just want to get married. I was very guilty of just being super superficial about this process. I can admit that. And not having anywhere the depth of appreciation I should have had for the sacrament. This was not a holy matrimony situation. This was just get married and do what I have to do to marry him.
And then even after we got married, I'm going to church on Sunday mornings. I'm climbing out of bed while my beautiful wife is staying there, and it's all nice and warm, and there's coffee that could be drank. And I'm like, I'm still going because I got the box I have to check. So I'm driving down to the church, and that lasted about 2 months. And then pretty soon, it was really easy to stay at home on Sunday mornings and not to go through that rigmarole. And she did go to Mass with me on Christmas Eve that year, and it was sort of like, I don't even know what's happening. And,
okay,
and,
but about that, I mean, I remember very clearly
the Christmas Eve
how I well. I'm not going to draw that particular memory because that was a different experience, but I do remember being confronted with Catholicism up close was a very different thing from the idea of Catholicism I had had. And now I'm like, now I'm in it. Now I'm seeing what Mass looks like. And I remember like all the old arguments against Catholicism was coming to the forefront, all the reasons why they were bad. Like, look at all this wealth. Look at all these shiny golden vessels. And you don't need that. I mean, like, you can have God in a living room, you know, like, and just preach passionately about the word. Like, that's the totality of the expression of the relationship. You know, it could be in a nondescript building. And I felt like it was a cheat, like, oh, you're leaning on this wealth. You're leaning on these pretty things to make me feel God. But really, you know, how authentic is it? How real are you? Is it, or is it just pomp and circumstance? So that was all like locked and loaded in my arsenal against the Catholic Church. But then I started to feel emotional and I couldn't explain it. It's like, why do I feel like I want to cry right now? I don't even understand this, but it is affecting me deeply and I don't know what is happening.
Yeah, there was a deeper paradigm, you know, beneath the specific beliefs. It's what kind of world do I think I live in? You know, what kind of universe is this? Mm-hmm. And that affects, you know, how we think worship should look or a relationship with God should look. Mm-hmm. And Catholicism has a very different, you know, picture of the universe, you know, than some other Christian denominations. Let's take a break there and we'll pick back up in just a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm. Great.
Thanks for being here. We'll be back in just a few minutes to hear the rest of Greg and Jennifer Willis's story. I want to remind you, their website is rosaryarmy.com. You can check that out. And also, if you go to chnetwork.org, you'll find all variety of stories from every background. And so if you're on a journey, check that out for some inspiration and encouragement. But for now, we'll be back in just a couple minutes to hear the rest of Greg and Jennifer's story. See you then. Welcome back to the Journey Home program. We're entering the second half of our hour tonight, speaking with Greg and Jennifer Willits. Their website is rosaryarmy.com. And when we left off, you know, you guys have become married and you're starting to get a feel for Catholicism. It's very different than what you had anticipated, what you had thought, mm-hmm. given your experience. And so what happens next, Greg?
Well, I mean, we're trying to figure out. We knew we wanted God in there somehow. I mean, yeah. It was starting to come out, but what? And she still had some resistance to Catholicism. I didn't have enough of a solid foundation that I was willing to, like, die on that. Well, that's a terrible analogy. But you know what I mean. And I started, I kind of quoted, you know, misquoted Star Wars. Like, if you can name, you know, in Star Wars, they said, if you can name a target, a military target, then name the system. And I'm like, if you could name a church, a Christian church, then name the denomination. We'll go to it. Because we wanted something where we were going to feel like we were engaged. And when we would try to go to a Catholic church, we just weren't finding a home, even as a early married couple. We had a friend who actually invited us. We went to a Unitarian service. We're like, okay, well, let's go try this because people seem, you know, to like it for whatever reason. We walked in, and I remember seeing someone walk in with a Diet Coke, like, during the service. They're like walking into and sitting down, holding a Diet Coke. And I'm like, it's like I can't go here. It's like
what is happening right now?
Diet Coke while someone's talking. It's like, this is not going to work at all. But and then later on, learned a whole bunch of other things about it. But we were, you know, I was open to shopping. And then we started, like, you know, we're listening to Christian music. And we were wanting to have something that's going to pump us up, like aerobics. You know, it's like, that's what we were searching for, something dynamic. Mm-hmm. And not realizing that, you know, the Catholic Church is really where we needed to be. A couple years after we were married, our oldest son was born in 1997. And even still, you know, I knew I had a box I needed to check, right? Got a baby, got to get him baptized. That's what you do. And there was this resistance still from Jennifer for us to even have him baptized yet. And we waited a full year before Sam was baptized. And finally she agreed. And we started we did a few little prep things at a local church, had him baptized. And about a week after his baptism, she said, I think I want to be Catholic. And it came out of nowhere. I was like, what, okay, I've been trying for two or three years now. What did I say that changed this all of a sudden, that you were willing to have that
right.
happen?
And in hindsight, when I look back at that moment, it's amazing how God works in one's life and how the presence of a child changes things. Even just the marriage was changing things. We realize stakes are higher. Right. We need to make decisions. So we do what most young married people do. You start looking through your mental reference points of life, like where did I see this before? What were the examples that my parents set? What were the example his parents set? And we knew that religion was on both sides. Going to weekly worship mass, something was there. And I still appreciated what it did for me, that growing up in that household meant something, even if it was through the Worldwide Church of God. I didn't have an issue for many years when I was in it because that's all I knew. And, you know, there were nice people there, and there still yeah. are nice people in the remnants of what's left of that religion even today. So we knew that we had to make this decision. And so having our first son, Sam, really was that catalyst to push us, okay, we have to make a decision. And so it wasn't too difficult to sort of consent to the baptism, although I felt a little weird by it because I realized if I'm looking at the stats, you know, we're a family of three. One's about to be. That's two to one, and I'm out and they're in. And, you know, and again, not even thinking about how I started. I wasn't even really thinking about the fact that I was a baptized Catholic, that didn't mean anything to me because I hadn't been taught anything about that sacrament, really. So I realized, okay, a trajectory is beginning. I could see it, you know. And so soon after, I started asking some questions because we were attending this little Catholic church out in McDonough for a time over at St. James. And there was a deacon there. And I started asking him questions about the faith. And he says, you know what? You're being called. And I never heard that language before. That was such a confronting idea to me. It's like, whoa, what? God is calling me? Jennifer Willits? Like, he's calling me? Like, he sees me? Like, how could he see me? Why would he want me specifically? And that was such a beautiful idea. And I was like, how could I say no? If he's calling me, I'm gonna go. I'm gonna answer. I want to say yes. And it felt so right. There was something organically right about this. Like, we're going to be a family that matches. We're going to be a family in alignment and values. I really like how this feels. It felt very comfortable. And then I started to get excited because I like learning. I didn't like it so much when I was in school. I really hated it then. But as I got out of school, I loved the idea of learning. And then I could now ask questions about the Catholic faith. And that was really lighting a fire under me because I had such new enthusiasm and everything was making sense to me. And then I could ask you tons of questions about Catholicism.
Which I didn't have the answer to. And so, I mean, when she was prepping to come in 99, and we didn't know at the time that she was pregnant with our second son, she came in Easter Vigil of 99, and we still, I honestly, when I look back, I'm like, we were not even close yet to the church, even still. Even though I sat there, I remember so clearly, I just was sobbing when she was confirmed. I was so excited that it's like we were all going to be in this together. But then over the course of the next few years, well, we were still a contracepting couple. We still didn't fully understand so many of the church's teachings. The Eucharist hadn't really become something that we were paying attention to yet. All these things. It was a few months after she came into the church and received her first communion that Eucharistic adoration was introduced to me for the first time. And that was out on a retreat. I'm like, what are we doing here? Hmm. I mean, the fact that I was 29 and I'm asking, what are we doing here? So there are all these kind of questions. And that it was actually that first exposure to Eucharistic adoration that made me question the church even more. I don't know what this is. And my doubt made me want to backtrack and keep looking for something else.
Yeah,
and that's really when we're going to a lot of contemporary Christian concerts, and they would do altar calls, and we're like, I love this, right? This is really cool. And we started asking questions of priests that we knew about, there are these Catholic rules, these boxes that I feel like need to be checked, and I'm not checking them all, like contraception, for example. And we went and spoke to a priest I had known since I was a young boy. I literally don't remember life without this priest. And we're like, we're really kind of confused right now because now our second son was born. We have two kids. There's something the church teaches about contraception. We just want to make sure that we're doing something right. And then he literally told us, well, I've done a lot of research on this, and I've found that it boils down to a matter of conscience, whether or not you use contraception. So we're like, okay, well, this priest that I trust gave us this information. I'm not going to do any research to see if he's wrong or what the church actually teaches. And so there was this confusion still reigned.
Right.
And we're not quite sure what we believe, and we weren't taking the initiative on our own to really start diving in more deeply. But then, a couple of years after that, we had the opportunity to go to a mass, and a Deacon Jack Jansen, last time I was on EW10, I mentioned him. I'll mention him again. Deacon Jack died at the end of 2006, but he gave a homily one weekend that we don't typically go to this one mass, and he just happened to be giving that homily. And Deacon Jack had a whole bunch of kids with his wife, and he explained it. And it made so much sense why the church teaches these things. And I'm a person, I don't want to just know the rules. I do need to know why. And I started to realize when he explained that, and I said to Jennifer, I said, we need to talk. She goes, we don't need to talk about that. he gave us a Dr. Jan Smith's tape, Contraception, Why Not? I listened to it. It all made sense. And literally within a couple of weeks, she was pregnant with our third son. And we've kind of been proponents of the teachings and promoters of the teachings of the Catholic Church in regards to being open to life for the very reasons of we've seen our marriage flourish. And going back to when those first few years of our marriage, before all this stuff that I'm saying right now, I really do believe, and I can look back at it now, and now that I have the understanding of the faith that I have, and we've had the opportunity to teach the faith to so many people over the years, that what was happening in the first 3 years of our marriage, even though we were pretty ignorant when we walked in, we had received a sacrament when we got married. We received the sacrament of holy matrimony. And we were, to the best of our ability, cooperating with it, even though we didn't fully understand it.
Right.
And not having a full understanding of the reception of a sacrament does not deter the sacraments and the grace from the sacraments from operating in the person's life. And
right.
I do truly believe that I'm so glad that we got married as quickly as we did. And for our two oldest sons who have already gotten married, they're young. They got married at an early age. We encourage them because of the graces they'll receive from that sacrament to help them grow in their faith. And I feel like the sacrament of holy matrimony has been one of the greatest blessings of my life, yeah, because of how it brought me deeper into my faith. So, those are a lot of things that were happening for us. But around 2001, 2002, we were still willing to leave until someone introduced to us Rome Sweet Home by Scott Hahn. It's always,
you knew that was going to come into the past.
1 out of 5, guests on Journey Home bring up that particular book.
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Hahn. Yeah, Kimberly, we appreciate it. And reading through that, suddenly I was like, wait a minute, you know what? I've been exactly where I'm supposed to be all along. Mm-hmm. And again, that book was full of a bunch of here's why. Here's why we do this. Here's why Mary's a part of it. Here's why the Eucharist has been important all along. Here's why the sacraments are so important. And having those whys, suddenly I was energized. Atlanta, where we live, Archbishop John Donahue brought in the Eucharistic Congress, made that a part of, when he was alive, a part of what he was doing in the Archdiocese, brought in 20, 30,000 Catholics every year. In 2002, we're going to go to this, we're going to be a part of this. We're going to, Scott and Kimberly Hahn were speakers that year, Deacon Alex Jones, others. And we went, and it was the first time where we were around that many Catholics talking about the truths of the faith in a deep and meaningful and in an exciting way. And we walked away from that day so on fire for our faith, never before. And I really believe 2002, even though I was born in 1970, 2002 was the year that we truly became Catholic and that we were all in, even though we'd both been confirmed, we'd both been receiving the sacraments.
One thing became very clear to me that mm-hmm. not only did we have journeys that led us, well, especially me in light of what I went through, to the Catholic Church. So that was one element of the journey. But what I didn't expect was that there would be another journey within the Catholic Church itself.
Yeah.
So it was like a journey to another journey. And I thought, well, I'm here, so everything's great. So I stayed very superficial, drifting in, the top level, not knowing that there would be this journey kind of back, down to a deep, really yes. profound way. And that would be unpacked slowly over time. But one of the sort of a perception that I brought with me from Worldwide Church of God and just coming from the outside of the Catholic Church in was I still didn't know what to do with Mary. That was still a rather large, I didn't have any bad feelings toward her. I just didn't have any feelings toward her. It was just a lot of emptiness and no real regard. So I came into the Catholic Church not fighting her. It's like, okay, maybe I'll just deal with this a little bit later. Maybe I just need to be Catholic for a while, and then I'll be ready to address this more fully. Because, obviously I went through RCIA, and so that there was a night where we talked about the rosary and Mary, and I'm like, okay, I could pray that and not feel anything bad. But eventually, it came to a head when I went to confession. Mm-hmm. And the priest heard my confession, and he, as part of the penance, he says, okay, I would like for you to pray, three Hail Marys. That was the first time I'd ever heard Hail Marys being part of a penance. And I'm like, yeah, I can't do that. No. And he's like,
my wife was the first person I've ever known to negotiate a penance.
And I'm like, I'm just being real. I'm being honest. I need another penance, something I could really understand. And so he really tried to say, well, imagine it's like, you're talking on the phone to a friend. I'm like, no, that's not helping. Whatever analogy you're trying to give me is not working. And he goes, okay. Pray in Our Father. Oh, I could do the Our Father. Yes. I remember that one from all of my life. I'm good. But it did reveal something big to me. It's like, I have to look at her. I have to address her, And then as I was preparing for being here, I was trying to remember, was there a clear moment where she became this, who I regard her today, like this beautiful mother figure? Like, did I have the falling off the horse moment? And I really didn't, because it was this long, gradual, gentle, patient, loving development of a relationship where a mother was just being so patient with me. And I remember just feeling absolutely okay with her. And I just wanted to know more about her. In fact, I became so intrigued. It's like, why isn't there more about her? I want to know more about Mary. Where can I find out? So that drove me to being very open to what would happen next in our family, which would be another life-changing moment with the formation of Rosary Army.
Yeah, well, we can go on to that, sure.
So it was right after that Eucharistic Congress in 2002. Again, just on fire, going to adoration now and understanding it, wanting to pray the rosary. And like Jennifer said, there were still some questions, right? So I remember I had a rosary, and I remember being in the parking lot at my job at the time. I used to work in the IT industry, and about to go in the morning. And I had a little bit of time, and I had this rosary, and I was listening to a talk from somebody. And I just, the talk was saying, just pray it. Just dive in and pray it, and you'll be guided. And I remember just not wanting to offend Jesus. I didn't want to offend him by praying this.
What? You felt that way inside the Catholic Church? Oh. That's such a Protestant
idea. Yeah, where'd that come from?
Because we were going to all these concerts and everything.
We were still being influenced.
I talk about, we used to, again, living in Georgia, going into a store one time, a Christian bookstore, and said, do you have any books on Catholicism? They're like, for or against it? And I said, for? And they're like, you're going to have to go somewhere else for that. I was like, the question, there was a lot of confusion in my life because of where I grew up. But going through, and sitting there in the parking lot that day, I literally stopped and I prayed to God. I said, I'm going to do this. I'm going to pray this rosary. But please, if this is offensive to you at all, just smack me upside the head somehow and make it known. But if this is pleasing, then maybe open a door or something to help me know that this is good and right. And that began a period of praying the rosary nearly every day, but a lot of fasting. I always have been terrible about fasting. And there were days at this job where like I felt drawn to fast on literally just water, for a day at a time, not knowing where that was coming from. And it's at the same time that I heard about total consecration to Jesus through Mary, according to St. Louis Marie de Montfort, for the first time. And this just sounded like, PhD level Catholicism. But I love a good challenge. And I love the saints that have provided solid answers to things. And I took on the challenge of going, of reading through some of his stuff. I wasn't ready to do the consecration yet, but I was sitting I went into confession that summer. And when I walked in, I saw the priest, he had a single decade knotted rosary, or a little decade, but it was made with a really thick twine. And I saw this thing and it was amazing to me. And a couple months later, I was at work, not even thinking about it, and then remembered it all of a sudden. I wanted to make one. I went online. I tried to find instructions. I couldn't find. But I need pictures. I need pictures. This is before YouTube. There were no videos of it. But I found some basic instructions. I started making these all-twine knotted rosaries, and I just was addicted to it. Long story short, during the first 6 months of making those, I did make my consecration. And the very week that we made our consecration to Jesus through Mary, had the idea of, I'm going to make this website, rosaryarmy.com, and I'm just going to give one of these rosaries to whoever wants one. Mm-hmm. And we started doing that, not knowing how, when you consecrate yourself to Jesus through Mary, and you're making this promise that I'll be your slave for your son and let you guide me, just how much she'll put you to work. And over the next 20 years, that has been what she's done nonstop, is provided us with unbelievable opportunities. The fact that we're sitting here right now, the fact that we've had a chance to speak at that very Eucharistic Congress that changed our lives, we've had the chance to speak at a couple of times. The fact that we had a radio show on Sirius XM for several years, the fact that we've had this apostolate, and we've had schoolofmary.com and totalconsecration.com, all these, we've written books, things that we never could have dreamed when we were these college students meeting at Waffle House for a cup of coffee. And Catholicism wasn't even really on our radar. And one of the most interesting things that I realized after Mary became a part of our lives was that fall before I auditioned for that play. And I was driving from the town of Conyers to downtown Atlanta. And I had a rosary that my dad had given me that he picked up in the Holy Land, but it was just over my stick shift. And I didn't really remember how to pray it. But I felt compelled. I'm like, okay, I know this is an Our Father and these are Hail Marys. I don't know what the other prayers in between are. I don't know about the mysteries, but I just kind of fought my way through the circle of the prayers. And I did that for almost 2 months. And it was years later, and after we came into the church, and I look back, and it was at the end of those 2 months when I met Jennifer. It was at the end of that 2 months that we began a whirlwind courtship that a year later we were married. It was a part of the journey, it began the journey that led her into the church and into full communion of the church. And it led me to total consecration and eventually her to total consecration. And the idea that we would then create this ministry, the downloads of our audio rosaries are in the millions, that millions of rosaries have been prayed. It gets me choked up. Mm. As a result of these two idiot kids that didn't know what they were doing, and that Mary can work through us to be able to bring other people to her son. And that really has become a big focus of our ministry, is like the fact that other people, she wants to do the same thing. She wants them to be consecrated so that she can use other people to bring other people to her son. And it's just been, it truly has been not just an amazing journey home. It's just been an amazing journey for us.
Yeah. You know, I think one of the implications of the church's sacramental worldview is that God is omnipresent in his creation. And if you give him an inch, he'll take a mile, right? You just need to give God a little bit. I'll try to pray this rosary. I'll go through the motions of Catholicism, even though my heart's not quite there. Give God just a little bit. He'll take a lot. We only have about 4 minutes left. Maybe Jennifer, would you close? You know, an invitation, an explanation, an invitation to those who are skeptical about Mary, the rosary, this stuff. You know, if someone is intrigued by Catholicism, but some of the things you've said, what would be your invitation to continue that journey? To just give God that opportunity, give Mary that opportunity. Speak a word to them.
I would say, you are ready right now. You don't have to have all of the answers. Just take that step of faith toward God, toward this Catholicism, toward all the teachings of the church. Just take a step and trust. Just trust how much God loves you, because I did not know I was loved, and that was the biggest lie. I mean, the devil was just like laughing at me, and he's intent on my destruction. And I had to start seeing that for what it was and realize, okay, I have got to make a decision. I've got to take a step of faith. It's okay that I don't know everything. It is okay. He loves me exactly with what's in my brain right now. If I can't remember what I had for breakfast yesterday, that's okay. Just be here. Just be present. Say yes to God and let God tell you which way to go next, and he will lead you to him. It's all about returning back to him in some form or another. And it is beautiful when you know that so that you can cooperate with it. And so if you ever feel like you're falling away or pulling away, or maybe you're giving into vice, mm-hmm. you can see it for what it is and come back to God. But don't hesitate.
Yeah,
today could be your very best day to come back to God.
Beautiful. What about somebody specifically who is leery about the rosary and about Mary and this language of total consecration? Mm. What might be a word of counsel to them?
Yeah. It's scriptural, right? I mean, if you trust mm-hmm. the Bible, then the rosary is your prayer of the Bible. It is going to walk you through. It's going to give you the opportunity to meditate and project a movie in your mind of the life of Jesus Christ. It's one of the most intimate ways of spending time with Jesus, because you're sitting there with his mom, the woman who held him as a baby, who nursed him and rocked him to sleep. And you're saying, show me my Savior as you saw him. It's such an incredibly intimate way. And that was transformative for us. That rosary isn't just this repetitive prayer. It's not just this, it's not a box just to check. It truly is one of your greatest tools of growing closer to Jesus Christ. And doing so and praying it every single day, as our mother has told us time and again, she's going to take those opportunities. She's going to take an inch and bring you that mile that you need to go in that journey with Jesus Christ. It's one of the greatest blessings that we've ever received, is the daily recitation of the rosary. It's changed our lives. It's changed our kids. It's changed generations, and it's changed countless millions of other people who have somehow stumbled into onto our website over the years.
Yeah, beautiful. With the moments that we have left, if people go to rosaryarmy.com, what will they find?
We'll send you a free all-twine knotted rosary. That's right out of the gate. You just go there and print out a form, send it to us. Jennifer will be the one to do it. She puts it in the envelopes and sends them off.
It's just me.
But we've been podcasting. We're old-time Catholic podcasters. We've been doing it for 19 years. So we have a podcast where we stumble through our faith even today, and we share that with you every single week. And so you can find that. And we have something brand new called School of Mary. We have all new video resources. We walk through total consecration with you. So if you've never done total consecration to Jesus through Mary, according to St. Louis Marie de Montfort, he's our dear, dear friend. He's the patron of Rosary Arby. Get me choked up and get talking about it. So we have that resource for you as well.
Awesome. Well, Greg, thank you so much. Yep. And Jennifer, both of you for sharing your stories. I do pray that Greg and Jennifer's story is an inspiration to you. And if you're on a journey yourself, reach out to us. Check out chnetwork.org. We'd love to hear of your story. We'd love to be praying for you and with you. We have many resources, as well as Greg and Jennifer's resources. So many resources out there. We're very blessed in this time of the church to have resources and people to accompany us in the faith. You yourself are on a journey. Never forget that. God is working in your life. He has something great for you. He loves you. You're never too far away from Him. He always wants to welcome you back. So God bless you on your journey today. We'll see you again next week. God bless.